Negromania, Part 4, by John Campbell. All we can say of this epoch is that these circumstances must have occurred before Menes, before the pyramids of Memphis rose in Egypt, before the pyramids of Meroe could have been built in Ethiopia. That civilization advanced northward from the Thebaid, which appears to have been the parental seat of the theocratic government before Mene, is not improbable. That the Caucasians who settled at Meroe may have somewhat preceded in civilization their brethren in Egypt is possible, though from monumental and other reasons I deem it unlikely. But it does seem unnecessary that the children of Ham, the Caucasian, the highest caste of that triple Caucasian stock, should have come from Asia into Egypt and have directly ascended the Nile, leaving the most eligible provinces and heavenly climate behind them, and have proceeded 1,600 miles to an almost barren spot, to Meroe, between the tropics, for the objects of study and improvement, and then have returned into Egypt to colonize that country, or in other words, to civilize their own relations. How much more reasonable is it to attribute the rise of civilization to the people occupying the best land under the pure skies of Egypt, or to suppose that its development was simultaneous among the same people along the whole alluvial line from Lower Egypt to Meroe? There are no positive data by which the antiquity of the pyramids of Meroe is shown to be more remote than that of Memphis, and I am inclined to regard both as dating about the same period, when pyramidal constructions were preferred to all others, for the last habitation of the royal dignitaries of Egypt and Meroe. It may be conjectured that if in Ethiopia these are tombs of individual kings, they continued there to erect pyramids long after this species of sepulchre was abandoned in Egypt, because this would, in some degree, explain their number. They were all built, and were ancient, in the days of Tiharqa, 700 BC. 139 pyramids at 22.5 years for a kingly generation would be 3,027.5 years, which is incompatible with all scriptural chronology. I am therefore inclined to consider the pyramids of Meroe to be tombs of kings, queens, and princes. We have no sure basis for calculating their antiquity, excepting that they belong to a period more ancient than 700 BC. But we know that whenever they were erected, it was by the same race which built those of Memphis, the children of Ham, the Caucasian settlers in the Nilotic Valley, and not by African aborigines of any race or of any period. The most critical examination establishes for the pyramids of Egypt and for Shufo, builder of the largest, an antiquity that cannot certainly be later than BC 2348, though probably dating some centuries earlier, but that they were erected by Caucasians is indisputable, that the pyramids of Meroe belong to the same epoch is probable, and that they were likewise built by Caucasians is positive. If the pyramids of Meroe are older than those of Memphis, their epoch must necessarily surpass the Septuagint era of the flood, if not that of the creation. If, from a rigid examination of their present appearance, the priority of those at Meroe is proved, as Mr. Hoskins considers, and this aged appearance cannot be explained by the effects of tropical rains and solar heat, acting with the hand of the spoiler on a friable material like a soft sandstone, when we reflect how little, in an Egyptian climate, time affects the appearance of monuments, and then, though erroneously, recognize in Ethiopia a better climate than that of Egypt, if, I say, we consider that notwithstanding so long a period, above 4,000 years, as we know the Memphite pyramids to have stood, time has had such a trifling effect on their massive structures. And we are to allow a still slighter effect to be produced by time on those edifices at Meroe. Why? We must carry the pyramids of Meroe beyond all chronological and measure their antiquity by geological periods. First, as regards the epoch of the building of these Meroe pyramids, which is one fact, and second, as concerns the national traits of the builders, who were not Africans, but Asiatics. The utter destruction of all biblical chronology by this process would be another. Now, things which are equal to the same are equal to one another. If they are anterior to Khufu's pyramid in Egypt, then Meroe must have been occupied in the earliest ages, many centuries before 2348 BC, by Caucasians, who must have migrated up the valley of the Nile and have been settled many ages at Meroe before they erected one pyramid. If posterior to Khufu's pyramid, Meroe was a colony of Egypto-Caucasians at any intervening period prior to the 16th dynasty, 2272 BC, for we know from positive conquests of Egyptian pharaohs in Nigritia and Ethiopia that Meroe was an Egyptian province from about that time down to a few years prior to 700 BC. Say, for 1,000 years. But if each of these pyramids of Ethiopia, like those of Memphis, be the sepulchre of a king, and if all of these Meroe edifices, according to Mr. Hoskins, were erected before Khufu's time, as there are 139 pyramids in Ethiopia, we should have 139 generations of Caucasian kings at Meroe before the pyramids of Memphis were thought of. Lastly, if the advocates of the African origin of the Egyptians cling to the superior antiquity of the pyramids at Meroe as a proof of the origin of civilization in Ethiopia and its consequent descent into Egypt, they are easily placed in a series of dilemmas. If they deny all Caucasian introduction at Meroe, in the hope of vindicating the ancient mental and physical capabilities of Negro or Berber races, as I have proved, the immense and almost biblically irreconcilable antiquity of the Memphite pyramids, the advocates of the African origin of civilization must reject scripture altogether, both for chronology and primitive migrations. If, on the other hand, they allow that, according to the Bible, Ham was the parent of the Egyptians, as we prove these Egyptians to have been pure-blooded white men, they must allow that civilization proceeding from the Caucasians took its rise in Egypt and that Ethiopian civilization is a consequence. While in no case can they make it appear that the African races above Egypt were one iota more civilized in ancient times than at the present day. For the civilization of Meroe originated with the Caucasians and expired on the extinction or on the deteriorating amalgamation of their high caste race. Such are the results of my reflections on the subject of the pyramids. They are not rashly advanced, nor devoid of infinite corroboration. They might be greatly extended, and a variety of interesting comparisons might be instituted between the pyramids of Ethiopia and Egypt, and those found on the Euphrates by Colonel Chesney, that one supposed to be the ruins of the Tower of Babel, and those in Central America. My province, however, is solely Egyptian history, and I will confidently assert that anyone who will read and study the works of the Hieroglyphical School, the volumes of the Champollions, of Rossellini and of Wilkinson, who away the demonstrations in Morton's Crania Egyptica, and who, to remove the last atoms of scepticism, will pay a visit to Egypt's time-honoured monuments and verify for himself the truth of the descriptions given by the hierologists, anyone, I repeat, who will do all this, which I have done, and then deny these evidences, would, I really believe, dispute the truth of Euclid's axiom and maintain that a straight line is not the shortest distance from one given point to another. Now, let me recapitulate in a summary mode what these results are. First, geologically, that the delta is as ancient as any portion of the alluvial soil of the Nile, and that it was inhabited at the earliest post-diluvian period. Second, geographically, that Lower Egypt was by climate, soil, and every circumstance most favourable to early settlement, and, as the most contiguous to Asia, was the region best adapted to primitive colonisation and the earliest civilisation. Third, scripturally, that the children of Ham came from the banks of the Euphrates into Egypt, through Syria, Palestine, and the Isthmus of Suez, that they inhabited the lower provinces of the Nilotic Valley in the first instance, whence they eventually spread themselves over the alluvial soil of that valley, in a natural order of migration and settlement. Fourth, physiologically, which for the first time is clearly demonstrated by Morton's Crania Egyptica, the keystone of the system, that the ancient inhabitants of Egypt were Asiatic in origin and Caucasian in race, from the earliest period to the extinction of Pharaonic dominion, which is in perfect accordance with scriptural migrations and their Caucasian origin as descendants of Noah. Fifth, ethnographically, according to Dr. Lipsius, that as the affinities of the Indo-Germanic and Shemitic languages with the Coptic establish the Asiatic and common primeval origin of all three, the remaining link of language is supplied to show the Caucasian attributes of the Egyptian tongue. Sixth, historically, from the collation of the most ancient records with each other, corrected by the application of hieroglyphical testimony, coeval with the earliest events of which history has left us, the annals. Seventh, and monumentally, from the edifices still erect in Lower Egypt, which are more ancient than any others in the world, and from the vestiges in Lower Egypt of early cities, which history attests were equal to any others in antiquity. We are fully justified in concluding that civilization, springing from Asia, introduced by Caucasians into Lower Egypt, obtained its earliest known developments in the lower provinces, and therefore accompanied a white race up the Nile, from north to south, as these people, the primitive Egyptians, must have ascended and not descended that river. Having thus quoted Gliddon at such length, I will now give a reason, and to my mind a most convincing one, of the capability of that gentleman in arriving at correct conclusions upon the Caucasian origin of the pyramid builders. Quote, "We are now approaching a period when, for all local Egyptian annals, my own personal recollection will supply the place of books, and I am able to speak as a spectator, and a little later as a very humble actor, in some of the scenes, of which I shall incidentally give sketches. These may be thought curious by my readers, and I can assure them that they are known to very few, and have never been published. I have said that from 1829 my local recollection serves, but, to avoid misapprehension, I will mention that my sojourn in Egypt dates from 1818, and with intervals of absence has been prolonged during 23 years to 1841, and consequently I presume to entertain opinions of my own on any affairs to which I am a party. I mention these circumstances with an apology for alluding to myself, only to satisfy my readers, that I am not a stranger in the land of Egypt, and may be allowed to speak from personal knowledge and long experience, without reference to the works or opinions of gentlemen, who, however greatly they surpass me in acquirements and talents, remained but a few weeks, months, or years in the valley of the Nile, and whose Egyptian sojournings, in point of duration, can rarely be spoken of in the same breath with my own. In fact, I feel myself to be a foreigner in every other country, and if, on ancient Egyptian matters, I am proud to consider myself the humblest follower in the footsteps of the hieroglyphical masters, or if, on scientific subjects, I make no claim to anything beyond the merest superficial acquaintance, it is not presumption in me to declare that on modern and on local Egyptian topics, I need acknowledge few superiors in or out of that country. Those who have been at Cairo in my time, among whom I have much pleasure in enumerating a host of American travellers, will allow that in this personal digression, I do not arrogate to myself more than their own experience will in fairness concede to me. Close quote. I cannot conclude this portion of my work without offering my tribute of gratitude to Mr. Glidden for placing before our citizens so much important information concerning the inhabitants of ancient Egypt. His own glowing words are the best calculated to convey to the mind an idea of this truly wonderful people. Quote, "Are not, however, Egyptian studies and the mythology, philosophy, and doctrines of that misrepresented race interesting to the divine who attests the unity of the Godhead and the Holy Trinity? Can the theologian derive no light from the pure primeval faith that glimmers from Egyptian hieroglyphics to illustrate the immortality of the soul and a final resurrection? Will not the historian deign to notice the prior origin of every art and science in Egypt, 1,000 years before the Pelasgians studied the isles and capes of the archipelago with their forts and their temples? Long before Etruscan civilization had smiled under Italian skies? And shall not the ethnographer versed in Egyptian lore proclaim the fact that the physiological, craniological, capillary and cuticular distinctions of the human race existed on the first distribution of mankind throughout the earth? Philologists, astronomers, chemists, painters, architects, physicians must return to Egypt to learn the origin of language and writing, of the calendar and solar motion, of the art of cutting granite with a copper chisel and of giving elasticity to a copper sword, of making glass with the variegated hues of the rainbow, of moving single blocks of polished syenite 900 tons in weight for any distance by land or water, of building arches round and pointed with Masonic precision unsurpassed at the present day and antecedent by 2,000 years to the Cloaca Magna of Rome, of sculpturing a Doric column 1,000 years before the Dorians are known in history, of fresco painting in imperishable colours and of practical knowledge in anatomy. Every craftsman can behold in Egyptian monuments the progress of his art 4,000 years ago, and whether it be a wheelwright building a chariot, a shoemaker drawing his twine, a leather cutter using the selfsame form of knife of old, as is considered their best form now, a weaver throwing the same hand shuttle, a whitesmith using that identical form of blowpipe, but lately recognized to be the most efficient, the seal engraver cutting, in hieroglyphics such names as Shufu's, above 4,300 years ago, or even the poulterer removing the pip from geese. All these, and many more astounding evidences of Egyptian priority, now require but a glance at the plates of Rossellini. Close quote. The preceding quotations are from the 15th edition of Mr. Glidden's work upon ancient Egypt, published by T.B. Peterson, number 98 Chestnut Street, Philadelphia, at the remarkable low price of 25 cents. I now proceed to place several quotations from Pritchard. Appended to them are my own views.